The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. To finish off what we were talking about yesterday in regard to wisdom and attainment, in the line of the scripture of great wisdom, no knowledge, no attainment. True attainment refers to the arising of true merit and virtue in Buddhism. The merit and virtue of attainment is wisdom and compassion. True wisdom manifests when there is prajna without outflows, without suffering. One helps others without thinking of oneself or of others. Selfless wisdom is compassion. The two are not separate. Acts of compassion lead to more merit and more virtue, as well as to the awakening of wisdom. Great compassion and great wisdom are what are called the two pillars of the Mahayana. We always emphasize compassion first, so that the focus and attainment of wisdom remains warm, human, and benevolent. Helping other beings is simply that, helping beings. If one is thinking of receiving or accumulating merit and virtue, one is suffering from greed. The bodhisattva in training learns to act with no consideration or thought of gain or loss. Whether merit or virtue come or do not come doesn't matter. It's enough to help, and that's all. Suffering, not merit, arises when one acts with personal gain as one's motive. It is important here to remember this and to reflect upon one's motives and intentions when helping. Another way of contemplating no knowledge, no attainment, is doing things for the sake of doing them. This doesn't mean activity for activity's sake, but doing things because they need to be done, not in order to gain something. Continuing to do that which needs to be done, which consequently helps other beings, helps one's mind to become stable, peaceful, smooth, natural, less prone to the ups and downs of emotions, moods, and feelings. This is why moving meditation, work that benefits other beings, is so important in our tradition. Working meditation, selfless activity, selfless service, provides a way to let go of the self and benefit others without gain or loss. It is an awareness that has to be cultivated in order to realize it fully. In other words, one has to do it and continue doing it in order to fully understand it. We talked earlier about how to cultivate this by watching and training with body and mind in motion. When you are still and mindful in motion, you learn to become aware of thoughts, expressions, tone, voice, body. As the abbot here, regardless of what I'm doing, I frequently get interrupted. When I'm concentrating on something, it's very difficult to be pulled away sometimes. And when I am pulled away, when I turn my attention to deal with the interruption, I can look less than pleased. Sometimes I know that I look frustrated or even mad. I might be. But I might also just be sitting still and continuing to concentrate. I am involved in a continuing training to learn to become more aware of myself and not give in to irritation or frustration or anger. This is also good training for the person who is interrupting me, because they must learn not to become swayed by the moods or the actions of another. Training in this way to understand no knowledge, no attainment, one goes from the mundane to the sacred, from small to large, from the known to the unknown. And it is always helpful to reflect, to see if our motives, our intentions, our actions are based on wisdom or on personal gain. The scripture goes on, in the mind of the Bosatsu, who is truly one with wisdom great, the obstacles dissolve. Another way of saying this is that with nothing to attain, the bodhisattvas who rely upon prajnaparamita have no obstructions in their minds. When an ordinary sentient being, through training, has left everything behind and lives and functions in prajna, that ordinary sentient being becomes a bodhisattva. The mind of the bodhisattva manifests. For the bodhisattva who relies upon prajnaparamita, there are no obstructions, because they rely on the wisdom that transcends suffering. In the training of bodhisattvas, however, from the first to the seventh level of bodhisattva training, bodhisattvas are still aware of saving sentient beings, and they still make vows which they persist in. At the eighth level and above, there are two more to go. They no longer make vows, and they're no longer aware of helping or of being helped. They are not aware of saving beings. They're not aware of that there are beings to be saved. Helping just becomes a natural and spontaneous action. I've mentioned these 10 stages of bodhisattva training on a few occasions, and we'll just list them here quickly so that you don't go away wondering what they are. They all come, this particular list comes from the Avatamsaka Sutra. The first stage is the stage of joyfulness. The second, the stage of purity. The third, the stage of giving light. The fourth, the stage of radiant wisdom. The fifth, the stage of conquering difficulties. The sixth, the stage of being face to face. The seventh, the stage of being far reaching. The eighth, the stage of being immovable. The ninth, the stage of meritorious wisdom. And the tenth and final stage, the stage of the Dharma cloud. The first six stages of bodhisattva training are the practice of the six paramitas, which lead one to wisdom, the final of the sixth. In the seventh stage, the bodhisattva is born into birth and death, into samsara, willingly, and cultivates skillful means called upaya in order to bring about the salvation of all sentient beings. In the eighth stage, the bodhisattva works to transfer his or her merit to others by means of the four bodhisattva vows that we recite at our renewal of vows. In the ninth stage, the bodhisattva achieves complete expression of compassion and cultivates the power of overcoming hindrances. And in the last and final stage, the bodhisattva attains Buddhahood with perfect wisdom. Those are the 10 stages. In the mind of the bodhisattva who is one with wisdom great, the obstacles dissolve. The mind of abiding is the mind of attachment, in that the ordinary discriminative mind is always abiding in something, whether or not the something is positive or negative. It doesn't matter if it's happy, sad, clear, foggy, peaceful, enraged, afraid, courageous. It's abiding in something. It's attached to something, to something, to some state. But the true nature of mind is that mind is not abiding, non-abiding. And when one is in a state of prajna, the mind freely arises and flows in this state of non-abiding. It is not fettered by states of mind. It is completely free. This is not just something that happens in scriptures. One can know this freedom in meditation. Thus the obstacles, the obstructions, dissolve when we relinquish the self and see it as shunyata, or when we let go of our attachments and realize the mind of non-abiding. The mind that does not abide lets go of self-concern, self-protection, and self-defense. And the world of gratitude, of peace, of joy, and of truth opens up. I am sure that every one of you has already had some glimpse of this, because there are times in life when we do loosen our grip on our attachments. This is why I encourage you all to keep training. Keep letting go of the self. Keep cleansing your karma. Keep training on as deep a level as you can. Even if our glimpses are small, temporary, or seem superficial, such glimpses can still show us how it can be. We can relax our grip a little more and become a little more peaceful. There is a Chinese Zen poem which describes the mind after enlightenment like clouds forming among tall mountains. The clouds appear to come from and return to the mountains, but in fact, the clouds move around and are not obstructed by the mountains. They do not cling to them. The clouds exist but have no definite form or substance. They are not obstructed by anything on the earth or in the sky. While I am certainly not enlightened, nor am I a bodhisattva, I know what this mind is like. I've had experiences of it in meditation. So this is not a metaphor, it's real. Bodhisattvas who have no obstructions in their minds are like these clouds. Their minds are unobstructed, but like the clouds, they continue to function. They are non-abiding. There is, in truth, no mind and no obstructions. You cannot have one without the other. With no mind in abiding, there are no clouds. In the mind of the Bosatsu, who is truly one with wisdom great, the obstacles dissolve. So much for bodhisattvas. What about us? We're not bodhisattvas yet. Our minds have obstructions. They seem to constantly abide in anything and everything that arises. Training can help us. The Buddha Dharma can help us. And especially the stillness and mindfulness of meditation practice can help us. Be aware of mental obstructions, how they affect thoughts, speech, and action. When you are still and mindful, maintaining the awareness of obstructions will gradually cause them to lessen. Learn to look at them with the teachings of the Scripture of Great Wisdom, Shunyata, the Four Noble Truths, the Five Skandhas, the 12 Links. When we are enlightened, when we become Buddha, we're going to be doing this permanently. So we might as well start now. You will do yourself a great favor in cultivating a willing and bright mind. We can't contemplate any other mind. We can only contemplate the mind as it arises right now. And this is the mind of obstacles. Thoughts connected with self, with attachment, with vexations and irritations are obstacles if we hold on to them. When we cannot let go of something, it becomes an obstacle to wisdom and to the awakening of the Bodhi mind. When we do let go of something, it dissolves, and we take a sure and positive step toward realizing the mind of non-abiding. A mind that abides has many attachments and afflictions, and it is not at ease or at peace. It's always involved with or at odds with one thing or another. When we can let go of this abiding, the obstacles dissolve and we are at ease. Remember that anything can become an obstacle and create suffering. Things that do not normally create suffering can do so when our minds are obstructed by something else. When we are frustrated in this way, everything becomes unpleasant, uneasy, difficult. Whatever is arising, let it go. The Scripture of Great Wisdom continues, and going on beyond this human mind, he is Nirvana. Someone who is able to relinquish and go beyond his or her obstructions knows that fear is nothing more than a shadow which sometimes appears and sometimes withdraws. It is simply another unreal cloud that passes across the sky. There is an English word that I've been coming across for years, used by a number of translators to describe the mind of unenlightenment. And this word is the word inverted. Now, I always thought this was a peculiar and inappropriate word to describe the mind of an ordinary sentient being. Weird, strange, number of other things, but inverted I never understood. But since reading the Scripture of Great Wisdom a lot lately, I've changed my view and now see it as something that is very apt. Inverted means turned back to front, reversed from the way it should be. when things are inverted, the relationship between them is such as to produce the opposite effect of what is intended. And this is a very good way to describe samsara and the way in which our inverted views affect us. Another poetic and very apt phrase that is used in Buddhism to describe unenlightenment is a dream within a dream. This describes an inverted state of mind which perceives life and the universe from a standpoint of a permanent self. As we know from our brief look at the scripture, this viewpoint of the permanent self is completely and utterly untrue. Not only is it untrue, it is suffering. The person who completely relinquishes self and sees the five skandhas as shunyata, lets go of all fear, changes the inversion back to the original and natural order of things, and awakens from this dream within a dream. This awakening is called nirvana, and the person who does this not only realizes nirvana, but embodies nirvana as well. Thus, this sense of this part of the scripture is going on beyond this human mind, the mind of an ordinary sentient being, leaping beyond fear, letting go of inverted views, and relinquishing the dream of a separate self. This being becomes nirvana. This is how I read this. A mind with attachments, is a mind with fears. These fears and attachments act as obstacles which seemingly prevent us from becoming one with the unborn, from realizing shunyata. And yet these obstacles are none other than the fears that we clutch at, the inversion we insist on, and the dream in which we slumber. We can change all this by training and by learning to let go of the obstacles and the attachments. To live in fear and anxiety is to live in a state of anticipatory or perceived threat. This comes from clutching to the delusion of a permanent self. And until we start to meditate and train, we can't help it. We're afraid of anything and everything. Being alive, being dead, losing what we have, not getting what we want, being sick, feeling insecure. It all comes from believing in and clutching at a me. And one can begin to dispel it by meditating on impermanence. We are impermanence. The world is impermanence. Everything within and without is impermanence. We can lessen our fears by looking at them and accepting them. Yes, if we were enlightened, they would all have dissolved, but we aren't and they haven't. Contemplate impermanence, the five skandhas, shunyata. When you meditate, do so brightly and with resolve. Training means developing a clear and realistic mind, letting go of expectations that are unrealistic, studying the Dharma and putting it into practice, maintaining a focused, meditative, contemplative life. If training has a goal, it's to wake up from the slumber of ignorance to the wakefulness of prajna. Along the way, we help others and gradually learn to let go of what we think we want and what we clutch at. The more one trains, and the more one lets go of a self, the less one's life belongs to oneself. Our life belongs to everyone, all beings, and it is used for the purpose of benefiting them. When we meditate, we do not try to think nor not try to think. We just sit. But none of us spend all of our time in formal meditation, and that is not a bad thing. It is very important to train throughout the day, to observe one's mind, to look at one's inverted views, to let go of attachments and obstacles. The four inverted views, these are perceiving suffering to be happiness, perceiving impurity to be purity, perceiving impermanence to be permanent, perceiving that which is not a self to be a self. When such things as suffering, impurity, permanence, self arise, just look at that. Are these things real, or are our views inverted? This is where and why suffering arises. You can, by the way, all move if you need to. Every being suffers from these views in some form or another. Clinging to these views is clinging to the dream of samsara. It leads us to having unrealistic expectations, creating unrealistic plans, chasing and taking refuge in various forms of worldly happiness, all of which are impermanent, and experiencing various forms of suffering. Learn to look at the obstacles and the fears directly. Look at the greed, look at the hate, look at the delusion. Do so with compassion, but look at it. Don't turn away from it. Look at suffering. Ask yourself, is what I'm doing causing me vexation or suffering? Reflect on emotion, mood, thoughts, intentions, actions. See how they are generated by the four inverted views. Rely on the teachings of this scripture, on training, on your meditation practice. Practice the Buddha Dharma and let It's soothing medicine. Its truth and teachings heal your mind and spirit from agitation, fear, doubt, and despair. Our own dreams, our own inverted views, our own attachments can become food for reflection and the means for awakening. Sometimes we don't even know we're dreaming until we've made a very bad mistake, or until everything has completely fallen apart. While this can be painful, waking up and seeing our dream for what it is lessens suffering. Remember what I said earlier. If you're suffering and you don't even know you're suffering, that's suffering. With some trial and error, some experience and training, you'll recognize the signs of your dreaming and start wanting to wake up. Some of our dreams are pleasant, some of our dreams are painful, but a dream is a dream. Don't become attached to it. Wake up from it. Eventually, we wake up from the dream of birth and death, the dream of self, the dream of ignorance. This is really waking up, true awakening. In our tradition of Buddhism, a bodhisattva awakens to the nirvana of the Mahayana, the great way or the path. This awakening comes without fear, confusion, or imaginings. There is no attachment to life, no attachment to the world, and the bodhisattva chooses to remain in samsara to help others. For these bodhisattvas, samsara is nirvana. It's the place where they do their work and refine their training. They do not separate themselves from ordinary sentient beings, nor do they have the emotional afflictions of ordinary sentient beings. Even though we are not yet awakened bodhisattvas, we are still on the path. And we too can contemplate nirvana in everyday life. How do you contemplate nirvana? In order to do so, one must not avoid situations which might cause suffering. Not avoiding problems or vexations. Instead, working on the causes of the problems and vexations. Working on suffering. Don't avoid it, work on it. We deceive ourselves when we run away, when we treat situations as if they did not exist. Through training, we can learn to cultivate compassion and some measure of calm and try to deal with things as best we can. Letting go, letting go, letting go. Even though we may not be anywhere near ultimate nirvana, we can still adopt the ways and behavior of a Buddha. Doing so transforms our mundane world into the highest life. The highest life you can live is the simple everyday training of a Buddhist who is sincerely trying to practice the way of the Buddhas and ancestors. The scripture of great wisdom says, all the Buddhas true of present, past, and future, they are all, because upon great wisdom they rely, the perfect and most high enlightenment. The sutras teach us that the Buddhas appearing in the past are all the sentient beings who have become Buddhas in all worlds, not just this one. Present Buddhas are the Buddhas existing in all the present worlds, not just this one. Future Buddhas are all bodhisattvas and include all sentient beings who train in the way of the bodhisattva. This means you, and it means me, and it means all beings. We are the future Buddhas. The full realization of Prajnaparamita means that one transcends attachment to self and all the dharmas, all the elements that make up the self, and that one realizes wisdom with no outflows. All the Buddhas do this. They all train. They are in a state of permanent training and permanent realization. They are all. They are all in the state of nirvana. Nirvana is the state free from all forms. It is immeasurable, inconceivable, where all thought of self has ceased. The qualities of nirvana are the realization of Prajnaparamita. Bodhisattvas who have reached nirvana are no longer fettered by the chains of samsara. Ordinary sentient beings cherish existence in samsara. Arahants labor to be liberated from it, and bodhisattvas come and go in it freely. The bodhisattvas take sentient beings and this world as their fields in which they cultivate merit. Buddhas have finished this task. They have perfected all compassion and virtue, and they still practice. The Prajnaparamita one should know to be the greatest mantra of them all, the highest and most peerless mantra too. A layer of all pain, great wisdom is. It is the very truth, no falsehood here. This is the mantra of great wisdom here. O Buddha, going, going, going on beyond, and always going on beyond, always becoming Buddha. Hail, hail, hail. According to this scripture, Prajnaparamita, great wisdom, is the allayer of all pain and suffering. It is the deliverer of ordinary sentient beings, and it enables us to become Buddha. The original wording of this mantra in Sanskrit is Gate, gate, paragate, parasamgate, bodhisvaha. Or, as you recite it at Jukai, gyate, gyate, haragyate, harasogyate, bodhisoaka. Gate means to go. Paragate means to the shore beyond, or to pass over into nirvana. Parasamgate means that we all cross over together. This is the spirit of the Bodhisattva wanting all beings to cross over to the other shore together. Bodhi means awakening or enlightenment. Svaha, complete or perfect. Go, go, go to the shore beyond. All together go to the shore beyond and complete the way to enlightenment. Hail. The entire scripture is the mantra of great wisdom, which teaches us and enables us to cross over and to become Buddha. It is the very heart of Buddhism, and it contains all the teachings within it. It teaches awakening and the means for awakening. As I hope you can see now, the scripture of great wisdom provides all of the teachings that one needs in order to become one with the unborn and to cleanse karma. It teaches us who we really are, where we really come from, where we are going, why we suffer, what our purpose is, and what the meaning of our life and training as a Buddhist means. It teaches us to use our faith and rely upon our inherent Buddha nature, our inherent prajna, to see the illusions of the obstacles, the self, and to realize the means for delivering ourselves from our inverted views and our ignorant dreams and slumbers. Buddhist training is a wonderful thing. It is also a serious thing. Coming to grips with oneself is never easy. Our attachments and our ignorance go very deep. Our karma is very raw. With every intention, thought, word, deed, and action, we can reinforce our delusions, create new karma, and perpetuate our existence in samsara. Life as we know it is karma. We constantly receive and respond to the karma of previous existence. We create new karma, and in the process, without realizing it, ensure that the cycle continues. Not creating karma right now is impossible. And it can seem both hopeless and impossible when we try to change it. Faith in the Buddha Dharma, faith in yourself, faith in the unborn will give you courage and resolve. Since we create karma in the first place, we have the freedom to choose and to change its direction as we make our choices and respond to life. This freedom is ours. It is our responsibility for our lives and actions. Just as we are the owners of our karma, we are also its designers. We can create karma that is good or bad. We have the freedom to do so. So contemplate this when you act. Are you ceasing from evil, doing only good, doing good for others? There is so much that we can do. We can train in this world. We can meditate. We can follow the teachings. We can train for the welfare of self and others. We can become more clear in thought, word, and deed. We can also awaken to prajna, to shunyata, to great wisdom. To live fully is to recognize how precious human life is. But also to learn to use it with purpose. For the Buddhist, the purpose is making the Dharma one's living experience, awakening to prajna paramita, becoming one with the unborn. This is the preciousness of our human life. But it is a life which needs to be used for this purpose. Please do not mistake the teachings of the Scripture of Great Wisdom. It is not a list of impossibles. It's not a list of frustrating teachings which one cannot attain. In studying it, one comes face to face with oneself. But hopefully in this encounter, if we can bring compassion and loving kindness, our hearts are going to soften and we are going to become more completely human as we train. To study this scripture means to gain a deeper appreciation of the Dharma, to understand what we are doing more clearly, to refine ourselves, our cultivation of training. We can learn to be better Buddhists and to be more human by keeping our aspiration for enlightenment bright in our hearts and minds. Keeping bright the will to awaken, the yearning for truth, the yearning for the unborn. We can actualize this by studying and understanding the teaching of the five skandhas, the 12 links of dependent origination, the 18 realms, and the Four Noble Truths. To generate the mind of enlightenment, compassion and loving kindness come first. And in this way, we learn to train and live in accord with the Four Noble Truths. The Scripture of Great Wisdom teaches what to look for and where to look. combined with your own meditation practice, it will teach you how to look and what to do with suffering, how to look at and what to do with suffering. Suffering comes from ignorance, attachment to self, and confusion caused by our afflictions. The scripture teaches how to live purposefully, clearly, how to fulfill the four great vows of the Bodhisattva, how to cultivate the mind of non-abiding, how to realize shunyata, how to become one with the unborn. Even though ignorance and attachment are at the root of our existence, even though we are stubborn and we refuse to give up our attachments easily, we can still vow to change, and we can be successful in doing so. We have the freedom to choose. We have willingness. We have our vows of training, and we have the training itself. These are the wellspring of action, the place where we engender bodhicitta, the place where we begin and continue the process of training and enlightenment, the endless process, the endless way. Willingness is crucial. Reverend Master always recommended to us, remember those three hails at the very end of the scripture. Never forget the hail. By following this path to the end, we will exhaust ignorance. We will cross the sea of suffering and samsara. We will take all beings with us and fully realize the mind of Buddha. Let's go, let's go. Let's all go together. This is the true teaching of the scripture of great wisdom, and it is the compassion of the Buddhas and ancestors. Homage to all the Buddhas in all worlds. Homage to all the Bodhisattvas in all worlds. Homage to the scripture of great wisdom.